From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Ukraine is on fire. The country is being decimated before the eyes of the world. The impact on civilians is reaching terrifying proportions.
As UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres calls for peace in Ukraine, we go to Kyiv, where the mayor has announced a 35-hour curfew after Russia's strikes intensify in the capital. We'll also speak to Joshua Yaffa of The New Yorker. He just left Ukraine after reporting on the Russian invasion for the past 2 weeks. And we look at how the Biden administration's refusing to directly condemn Saudi Arabia for executing 81 men in its largest mass execution ever.
Does the United States also condemn the executions?
Well, we've seen these reports that Saudi Arabia executed 81 people on March 12th. We continue to raise with Saudi Arabia the need to ensure fair trial guarantees, freedom from arbitrary and extrajudicial detention, transparency, the rule of law, and freedom of religion and belief.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The mayor of Kyiv has declared a 36-hour curfew after a series of Russian missile strikes hit residential areas of Ukraine's capital. At least two people died when a Russian missile hit a 16-story apartment complex. Meanwhile, intense fighting raged outside the capital as the Russian advance appears to be stalled. In southern Ukraine, a convoy of 160 cars was allowed to escape the besieged coastal city of Mariupol on Monday. But Russian troops reportedly refused to allow an aid convoy into the city. An advisor to Mariupol's mayor says Russia's two-week assault has killed up to 20,000 people in the city, though it was impossible to verify the figure. Today, the prime ministers of the Czech Republic, Poland and Slovenia are traveling to Kyiv to meet with the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky. On Monday, Zelensky spoke directly to the troops invading his country, saying in Russian that they should surrender.
On behalf of the Ukrainian people, we give you a chance to live. If you surrender to our forces, we will treat you as humans have to be treated, with dignity. The way you have not been treated in your army, and the way your army doesn't treat our people. Choose.
President Zelensky is set to address a joint session of the U.S. Congress by video link Wednesday, where he's expected to ask for more lethal weapons and for the U.S. to broker a deal that would see MiG fighter jets transferred from Poland to Ukraine. Meanwhile, talks between Ukraine and Russia are resuming today, after headlines will go to Ukraine for the latest. In Moscow, an employee of the main state-owned television station, Channel One, burst onto the set during Monday evening's live news broadcast, holding a sign reading, "No war, don't believe the propaganda," in English and Russian. "They're lying to you here." The protester, Channel One producer and editor, Marina Ovsyannikova, appeared on screen for several seconds, shouting, "Stop the war, no to war," before the camera cut away. Listen carefully.
Російський прем'єр підчеркнув, надо усилить сотрудничество в рамках союзного государства, а на совещании в правительстве обсуждали, как сохранить доступность.
Marina Ovsyannikova was arrested by officers with Russia's Interior Ministry. She since disappeared and reportedly has no access to legal representation. Ahead of her protest, she recorded a video saying she'd worked for years spreading Kremlin propaganda as a producer at Channel One.
I'm ashamed I allowed lies to be told on TV screens. I'm ashamed I allowed Russian people to be fooled. We were silent in 2014 when it all started. We did not go out to protest when the Kremlin poisoned Navalny. We simply watched this inhumane regime. Now the whole world has turned away from us, and the next 10 generations of our descendants will not wash away the shame of this fratricidal war. We Russians are wise and proud. It is up to us to stop this madness. Come out to protest. Do not be afraid. They cannot put all of us in jail.
As she spoke, Marina Ovsyannikova wore a necklace featuring Ukraine's national colors, blue and yellow, alongside Russia's white, blue and red. She said her father is Ukrainian and her mother Russian. Human rights groups in Russia say 15,000 people have been arrested in anti-war protests across the country since the start of the Ukraine invasion. The Biden administration's warned China against assisting Russia with financial or military assistance in the face of devastating sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. On Monday, a U.S. delegation led by the National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met with Chinese officials in Rome, hoping to press Beijing into severing ties with Moscow. The meeting came as China's foreign ministry denied reports that the Kremlin asked Beijing for military equipment.
Recently, the U.S. has been spreading disinformation against China in regards to the Ukraine issue, time after time, with sinister intentions. China's position on the Ukraine issue is consistent and clear, and we have always played a constructive role in persuading peace and promoting talks.
The United Nations warns acute cases of hunger in Yemen have reached an unprecedented level, with over 160,000 people likely to experience famine over the second half of this year. The UN says more than 17 million people in Yemen are currently in need of food assistance, with persistent high levels of acute malnutrition among children under the age of five. The stark warning came ahead of a donors' conference on Yemen planned for Wednesday. Yemen suffering the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, 7 years after the Saudi-led coalition launched its war and blockade of Yemen, backed by arms sales and technical assistance from the United States and allies, including France and the United Kingdom. Newly declassified documents reveal the CIA used a prisoner at a secret prison in Afghanistan as a training prop to teach interrogators how to torture other prisoners. Portions of a 2008 report by the CIA's inspector general made public in court filings reveal the prisoner, Omar al-Baluchi, was repeatedly stripped naked and had his head slammed into a plywood wall by trainee interrogators who lined up to practice the technique on Baluchi for up to 2 hours at a time. The inspector general's report revealed the torture left Baluchi with brain damage and did not yield any useful intelligence. Baluchi is still being held at the U.S. prison in Guantanamo, where he's been in pretrial hearings for 10 years on charges he participated in plotting the 9/11 attacks. Britain's highest court has rejected an appeal from Julian Assange, who's seeking to block his extradition to the United States. The ruling means British Home Secretary Priti Patel will have the final decision on whether to turn Assange over to the Biden administration. Assange faces espionage charges that could bring up to 175 years in prison after he published classified U.S. documents on WikiLeaks that exposed war crimes. Assange's lawyers argued he could face prolonged solitary confinement in a U.S. supermax prison, conditions tantamount to torture. This is Simon Crowther, a legal advisor with Amnesty International.
What it means is that non-legally binding diplomatic assurances that Julian Assange would not be tortured will not be scrutinised by the Supreme Court. This is bad for Assange, but it's also bad for justice in the UK, and it's bad for the global prohibition of torture, because this kind of agreement really needs all the scrutiny that it can get.
Julian Assange has spent over 1,000 days locked up in the Belmarsh high-security prison in London, where he recently suffered a mini-stroke. He's scheduled to marry his fiancée, Stella Morris, inside Belmarsh on March 23rd. To see our interview with Stella Morris, you can go to democracynow.org. British lawmakers are calling on Prime Minister Boris Johnson to cancel his planned trip to Saudi Arabia for talks with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Opposition politicians and even some members of Johnson's Conservative Party cited the recent mass execution of 81 men by Saudi Arabia as the latest example of the kingdom's abysmal human rights record. Johnson has called on Saudi officials to pump more oil to bring down rising energy costs as Western countries look for alternatives to Russian oil. Last week, the White House came came under fire after a report claimed President Biden is planning a visit to Saudi Arabia to, quote, help repair relations. We'll have more on the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia later within the broadcast. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has reportedly retreated from a plan to discuss the lifting of sanctions on Venezuela's oil industry. Several U.S. senators, including Florida Republican Marco Rubio and New Jersey Democrat Bob Menendez, objected after reports emerged that Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro met with American officials in Caracas earlier this month. Meanwhile, Koch Industries signaled this week it has no plans to join nearly 400 other multinational corporations that have suspended their Russian operations. The conglomerate, which is run by the billionaire Republican Party donor Charles Koch, owns at least three companies still doing business in Russia. Idaho's Republican-led legislature has approved an anti-abortion bill modeled after Texas's first-of-its-kind law that effectively bans abortions after about 6 weeks. The Idaho law allows family members of a pregnant person, as well as a potential father, to sue a doctor who performs an abortion. Those who succeed could collect $20,000 plus legal fees from the abortion provider. Under the law, a rapist could not file such a lawsuit, but a rapist's relatives could sue. This comes just days after Idaho lawmakers approved a bill that would ban puberty-blocking treatment, hormone therapy, and gender-affirming surgery for trans children. It would also make it a felony to take trans youth out of the state to receive that care elsewhere. Those found guilty face up to life in prison. Meanwhile, Mississippi Republican Governor Tate Reeves signed a bill Monday limiting how race can be discussed in classrooms. The bill garnered support only from white Republicans. All of Mississippi's black legislators opposed it and staged a walkout in January to protest it. And in a reversal, West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin said Monday he will oppose President Biden's nomination of Sarah Bloom Raskin to serve on the Federal Reserve Board. Manchin's change of position all but dooms Raskin's prospect of confirmation, which is opposed by all 50 Senate Republicans, including, most recently, Alaska's Lisa Murkowski and Maine's Susan Collins. Sarah Bloom Raskin has vowed to focus on how the climate crisis threatens the economy. Last month, Democracy Now! Asked Raskin's husband, Democratic Congressmember Jamie Raskin, why Republicans oppose her nomination.
All of this is about things that she has said or written about climate change. She has said, of course, that she will follow the law and act completely within the dual mandate of the Fed. But what they're attacking is the idea that there can be citizens who are fully aware of climate change, who take it seriously, who can serve honorably and lawfully in other capacities.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The mayor of Kyiv has declared a 35-hour curfew after a series of Russian missile strikes hit residential areas of Ukraine's capital. At least two people died when a Russian missile hit a 16-story apartment complex. This comes as the prime ministers of the Czech Republic, Poland, and Slovenia travel to Kyiv to meet with the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Talks are also resuming today between Ukraine and Russia. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an immediate end to the war.
Ukraine is on fire. The country is being decimated before the eyes of the world. The impact on civilians is reaching terrifying proportions. Countless innocent people, including women and children, have been killed. After being hit by Russian forces, roads, airports, and schools lie in ruins. According to the World Health Organization, at least 24 health facilities have suffered attacks. Hundreds of thousands of people are without water or electricity. And with each passing hour, two things are increasingly clear. First, it kept getting worse. Second, whatever the outcome, this war will have no winners, only losers.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, we go now to Ukraine, where we're joined by Peter Zalmayev, the director of the Eurasia Democracy Initiative, joining us from outside of Kyiv. Peter, welcome to Democracy Now! You have this emergency curfew that has just been imposed, what is it, 35, 36 hours. Can you describe what you're experiencing right now in your community?
Well, the curfew being imposed by the mayor is clearly designed to prevent from any provocations inside. We now have information that weeks prior to the...
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 6 degrees Celsius. Thursday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 15 degrees Celsius. Friday will be cloudy with sunny breaks and a high of 9 degrees Celsius. Saturday will bring mixed precipitation and a high of 4 degrees Celsius. Sunday will bring mixed precipitation and a high of 5 degrees Celsius. Monday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 7 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 7 degrees Celsius.
Good. Great. Not bad at all. A-okay. Tickety-boo. Fine, thanks. All good. It's going gangbusters. Just great. When people ask us how we're doing, we often say fine, even if it's not always the case. If you aren't fine, say something. To get help, call InfoSocial 811. Because talking is the first step towards getting better. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Fascinated by the traces we leave of ourselves, Nayla Dabaji is driven by an interest in migration, temporality, and the way in which mobility and lack of information can destabilize our daily lives and alter our perception of the world. With Documentaire on Des Rives, March 17th to April 16th, 2022, she examines the creative process behind her video piece, Boomerang, a work that can be interpreted on a number of levels and which takes as its point of departure the idea of being out of sync, through which the visual artist explores the ambiguous and polymorphous nature of memory. With us today, we have Nayla Dabaji. Hi, Nayla, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be an artist.
So I'm Nayla Dabaji. I was born in Beirut and I currently live in Montreal. I'm a visual artist as well as a video artist. Often in my work, I combine a variety of practices like photography, drawing, video art, and also writing. I've always been really interested in image, sound, and text and how they can come together from different contexts or sources and how I can combine them and work from my personal archive, found footage. And this way of working has allowed me to kind of juxtapose several stories, geographies, and narrative structures. So, yeah, and my projects are often triggered, like, for example, by an event or a story and an experience. And then I'm interested in document it, come back to it, like read it again, reconstruct, recreate, and remake.
What is the history of Documentaire on Des Rives?
In 2019, and through Documentaire on Des Rives, I've been like reflecting a lot on different approaches for staging a work, the work process and the non-fixed state of a work. And I find the creative process quite complex. And so instead of showing a finished piece with, in this case, it's Boomerang, the video, I was interested in showing the different components of this video, like whether they're images, sounds, or drawings and text, and how I can find ways to make them connect in the exhibition space. So it's a bit like, instead of watching Boomerang on a screen, it would be like, if the piece was like, the components of the piece would be around you instead of in front of you. So that was what triggered really in the project.
Describe your creative process through your video piece, Boomerang.
A Boomerang is about a seaside stroll, which brings back the memory of a conversation with a friend at dawn in the mountains. And it happens like in a way between night and day. And memories come back to me and they are delayed and trapped behind the screen of a news broadcast. So with Boomerang, the creative process consisted of taking this memory and trying to reconstruct it, but in another place, through image, sounds, and text that were coming from different sources or location. And for the exhibition, the idea is to present these components, the components of Boomerang, whether photographic, textual, or audio. And in a sense, they can echo each other in the space and generate a reflection on time and the uncertain, ever-changing, non-fixed state of memory.
Which societal issues are addressed in Boomerang?
The project at its source is a very personal memory. It's based on the conversation with a friend in Lebanon. And this memory that came back to me as I was walking near the sea in the Magdalen Islands in Quebec. So there was this conversation we had about the footage that my friend saw on TV. And I got interested in the juxtaposition of this place near the sea and images of the TV know? So the exchange we had and all together, how we could combine them in a video. So in a sense, like there is Lebanon and there is the Magdalena Island that became somehow related through my experience. And maybe this could be like a societal issue or aspect, because I try to go deeper in that intercultural aspect by creating a fragmented places that can suggest other places.
How does memory play through this exhibition?
So in the exhibition, the memories are looked at it in their fragility. And for example, there is a sequence of photographs that document the walk by the sea, but the image come from different locations. So you have different places, Lebanon, Magdalene Islands, but also Mont-Mégantic, Jordan, Sandbanks, among others. And also there is a sound piece, and in the sound piece, you can hear ambient sounds, for example, that are juxtaposed. So it's a kind of imaginary place. So for example, you hear sea waves, but also you can hear crows, and crows are more likely to be present in cities. So it kind of creates a kind of shift, these two places together, two sounds together. Another example is in the space, you have a video and you have also like the script of the video, but they are like in a different place in the gallery. So you have an image in one place and the text in another. So these are ways to kind of play with memory in the space. And there's also drawings, for example, that regroup elements from the script, from the videos, from the sound, and they are together in another space that is the space of the drawing.
Where and when can the exhibition Documentaire en Dérive be viewed?
So Documentaire en Dérive is on view at the Gallery of May, Montréal Art Interculturel, from March 16 to April 16. And the gallery is open Tuesday to Saturday from 12 to 6 p.m. And the opening of the exhibition is this Wednesday, March 16 at 5 p.m.
What will the future of the exhibition be?
I've been working on this project since 2019, and this exhibition was presented differently at different time, so like different version of it. So it's very possible that it would be presented again in the future, like differently.
If our listeners want more information or to buy tickets, where should they go?
They can check the May Montréal Art Intercultural website to have information on the exhibition, and there's no need to buy tickets or to reserve before going. It's a free admission.
Thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Nayla Dabaji speaking about the curation of her exhibition Documentaire en Dérive. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
I need to be rebirthed again, renewed, set free, live out my plan, but only I can birth myself. Let go of the too sweet mother, leave her on the shelf, still lives in me, with me forever, but awakened with light and teaching my mother a warrior. Kick off my predator, show sharp teeth and growl, carry on untamed, carry on the prowl, for only in this mode, untamed, can live in life wild, free and brave. Sweetness is our chains, you see, to comforting we attract disease, souls who need a soul to feed on, depraved of their own light. Sinners in another life living now as hollow souls. We're taught since youth our lot in life is to be the light, this is our plight. Wrapped up in bows, loving words of encouragement given to us while taking blows. But open wild woman and read her deed, you'll see our inheritance is freed. If only you believed, you could be terrified. Untamed. What do you say? Don't you?
Hello and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized informative podcast made to be listened to in the shower, but really, you can listen to it anywhere.
The whole point of this podcast is we take the mysteries of the world, those questions that you didn't even know you had, and we debunk them in a bite-sized, informative way.
So far, we've answered questions like...
Why do we fall in love?
Do plants have feelings?
How can I bring the most happiness to the people around me?
Who are better drivers, men or women?
Is there a correct way to wipe your bum?
And loads, loads more.
I suppose you could say...
We expand your mind while you wash your behind.
And this week is no different, although it's a little bit late.
It's a day late.
But it won't happen again.
Hopefully this hasn't affected your hygiene standings. People are talking around the water cooler at the office about how much you smell. So, what's our question this week, Taz?
This week's question came from our head stuff frontman, Paddy, who we thank at the end of every episode. And he asks, do mice actually like cheese? So as I said, this question came from our very own Paddy, and its simplicity really intrigued me.
Me too. Like, when you think of all the classic cat and mouse cartoons, like, it always has cheese and the mice. Like, the mice are always mad into their brie, into their gruyere. You know, they're crawling all over a bit of Gouda. You know, it's actually always Emmental. It's always cheese with holes in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the mice are mad. Like, Tom and Jerry. Jerry is mad for a block of cheese. And to be honest, you know what? I'm also mad for a block of cheese. I think I might have my mouse DNA because generally, like, I come in from a night out and just start nibbling on a bit of Stilton or something. It's because cheese is absolutely delicious.
Cheese has to be one of the most delicious things one can purchase. Okay, and I know that we usually leave the facts until the end of the episode, but this one's too amazing. I have to stick it in at the beginning. Guess how many types of cheeses there are in the world?
Okay, hang on. I'll name a few. We've got cheddar, red Leicester, brie.
Unless you're a second choice.
I don't know. It just jumped into my head. Emmental, Gruyere.
You'll never. There's so many.
Munster. There's a cheese called Munster.
Okay, I'm going to stop
Raclette.
You.
Roblochon. Oh, Moliterna al Tartufo.
You're not going to guess how many.
Why? I have to have gotten at least a third of the cheeses there.
Okay, well, first of all, I got this number from a website called www.cheese.com.
Sounds authoritative.
Which is just the best thing ever. And, believe it or not, there are about 1,800 varieties of cheese.
1,800, like 1,800?
1,800.
What? Hang on, so are you telling me that I could eat a different type of cheese every day for about 4 years and still not have
all the cheeses?
Oh my goodness. I think I've just found my new 4-year mission. What?
I know, nuts, isn't
that it? That is, Jesus Christ, that's a lot. Cheese pun one. Let's go. So, okay. It's been established that we clearly like cheese. Mm-hmm. But do mice also have excellent taste like us cheese connoisseurs?
Okay. So, as you said, cheese has long been associated with mice in cartoons and paintings and literature. The animals are often depicted sneaking into kitchens at night to grab crumbs of the food that they assume to be a tasty treat. And more often than not, it would be a cheese with holes in it. Research has shown that mice will eat pretty much anything that has minor nutritional value. So, yes, mice will eat cheese, but what we're going to look at is if they actually prefer cheese to other foods.
What if all mice are actually like Remy from Ratatouille and they're connoisseurs and they all have like a really educated palate?
It's such a brilliant film.
I love it. But like, do you reckon that a mouse's death row meal, like, you know, if it was walking towards the trap and it was said, you're allowed to have one last little nibble of something, Mr. Mouse, do you think it'd be cheese?
Well, ironically enough, most people put cheese in mouse traps, meaning that it technically would be their death row meal. It would be the last thing that they nibbled on before.
Oh my God, my mind is blown. That is grim. Oh, it's like death row meal by default.
Okay.
Wow. So, okay.
So a few experiments have been carried out to test this theory, whether mice would choose cheese over any other meal. BBC Two's Winter Watch devised a non-scientific test that appeared to back up the claim that mice will in fact go for pretty much any food, and in fact, cheese is often bottom of the list.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So the program makers put out a plattering offering cheddar cheese, peanuts and grapes and recorded the food choices made by visiting wood mice.
I like the words visiting wood mice. Kind of sounds like, you know, you get this tiny little knock on the door and you have to take out your tiny platter, the little bit of peanut butter and a grape and a piece of cheese for the visiting wood mice. It's like when your aunts visited Christmas. It's like, hello. Sorry, aunties, if you're listening, you're not wood mice. So there are three different foods there. We've got the cheese, the peanuts, and the grapes. Honestly, that sounds like a fairly well thought out cheese board.
Doesn't it? Well, almost every time the mice went straight to the peanuts, a grape was eaten on one occasion, but the cheddar cheese was avoided.
Do you know what kind of cheddar they were using? Like, because honestly, there's times that I'll avoid, like, you know, I'd like a good, like, a Kilmeaden or a Dubliner, but like sometimes, you know, you get cheddar from like a large brand supermarket and it doesn't cut the cheese. It's just not good enough. Anyway, like, I'm just going off on my own little cheese rant. I'm thinking about cheese so much. So they avoided the cheese. I can't believe they picked a grape. Over, like, I can't even picture a wood mouse. A wood mouse is about the size of a grape.
Okay, so
they actually avoided the cheese.
According to the team, peanuts' calorific content is about 50% greater than cheese. So the rodents may have been attracted to food that provides more energy. And the Winter Watch presenter, Chris Packham, said, "These animals are making the right choice. They are what we call optimally foraging. And this is what we would expect them to do, particularly at this time of the year when foraging activity is absolutely crucial."
So stealing our cheese is their last resort, Papa Roach style.
Genuinely. Another study carried out by a Dr. David Holmes of Manchester Metropolitan University found again that mice don't like cheese at all.
Well, but this is, my whole life is a lie.
I know. So you may have noticed from time to time that cheese has a rather pungent aroma.
Pungently beautiful.
Pungently beautiful. But mice notice this too, and their little noses are much more fine-tuned than ours. So if a rodent is hungry enough, it may nibble on the cheese, but the scent would not lure a mouse to a trap. And alarmingly, Dr. Holmes even said that mice would turn to humans and other animals as a food source over the dairy option.
Holy shit, imagine being eaten alive by mice, looking at a block of cheese across the room going, "Why didn't you eat the cheese?"
I think you'd be safe if anyone, like, if they're thrown off with the pungent aroma of cheese, they wouldn't come near you.
That's not fair. So if mice don't like cheese, where did the rumours come from?
Okay, so one theory is that back when people stored grains in jars and had meat salted and hanging high, the cheese, which has very few storage requirements, was the most accessible food in the house because it needed space to breathe. Discovering nibble marks on the cheddar could have led people to believe that, you know, it was a mouse's cuisine of choice.
So it's not necessarily that mice liked cheese, it's just that it was the only thing that was accessible.
Yeah, exactly. And it's obviously on a cheese, you can see noticeable marks if a mouse was eating it. Mm. Whereas there's other things like grains where you wouldn't notice little tiny nibble marks as easily.
Or little tiny mouse poops.
Little tiny mouse poops. But another theory that comes again from Dr. Holmes from Manchester Metropolitan University suggests that the myth may have arisen from some ancient legend, as mice frequently popped up in various ancient mythologies.
Any particular myths about the mice and the cheese?
Right, so I did a lot of digging on this, but I found one possible answer from the website called Today I Found Out, which is actually very, very good. So white mice were often kept under the altars in Apollo's temple in ancient Greece. Apollo himself was often referred to as Apollo Smintius, meaning Apollo the mouse. Now, to add on to this, one of Apollo's children, Aristeus, in ancient Greek mythology, is credited with teaching mankind to make cheese, which he learnt from myrtle nymphs.
Honestly, I've just read Blind Boy Boat Club's book, and that could be a passage from it. That is, really?
Yeah. Like,
so, the son of Apollo, who apparently was known as Apollo the Mouse, taught people how to make cheese because he learned it from some myrtle nymphs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why aren't there churches dedicated to Aristeus then? If he created cheese, he needs to be the one who's worshipped instead of any other deity.
Okay, anyway, so the connection between mice and cheese may have stemmed from some sub-legend in there or something, because some artist's depiction of Apollo and Aristeus may have included mice and cheese, mice from Apollo and cheese from Aristeus in a painting of something like that.
Okay, so it could have been like a misconstrued kind of a bit, seeing, you know, a big block of cheese in a painting. You're like, oh, mice, that's it.
Well, Apollo is the...
He's the mouse dude.
Apollo the
and
mouse.
Aristeus is...
Yeah.
Aristeus is mad for the chase.
So that's a very,
okay.
Far-fetched...
It's far-fetched, but it's plausible. Are there any other myths that could be linking the little squeakers with the cheesy beakers?
Okay, so this one is back again to Dr. Holmes from...
Manchester Metropolitan University.
Woo! Dr. Holmes has written our episode for us today. But Dr. Holmes conducted tons of research on the cheese mouse phenomenon.
Imagine that being your life's work.
Well, what's our life's work?
Solving the mysteries of the world.
Yeah, so you don't have to. Okay, so Dr. Holmes said, cartoonists like to draw little segments of cheese with holes in them and little mice's faces poking out of the holes. They will admit this, and they say quite simply, it's a really good image, and it's the kind of image that they will continue to use, even though we know mice don't in fact like cheese at all. So... it's possible when early artists included this imagery in paintings, it was simply because it made a really, really good image.
Really? Simple as that?
Simple as that.
Like, you study the relationship between mice and cheese forever, and then it all boils down to people like drawing mice with cheese.
Yeah, literally. That's exactly it.
Okay.
But whatever the origin, given that mice aren't overly fond of cheese, it doesn't exactly make the most effective bait in a mouse trap. So if you are trying to trap a mouse, they love peanut butter and chocolate.
This is only supporting my theory that I'm going to air for the first time right here on In the Shower, that Taz is actually a mouse.
Okay, Marcus, I will agree that I'm obsessed with peanut butter and chocolate, but I also love cheese.
You don't like stinky cheese, though.
And you.
Okay, fine.
But, even better... city mice have finer tuned taste buds. So Stephen Turner, who is the managing director of the largest mousetrap distributor in Europe, Pest Control Shop, also noted that inner city mice, who become very accustomed to surviving on fast food scraps, love McDonald's hamburgers.
A little fillet of fish.
Little hamburger in your mousetrap.
Oh, the luxury.
Okay, so are you ready for some mousy cheesy facts to
end
the episode?
Please.
Mousy cheesy. So researchers in Israel have successfully trained mice to be used as bomb and drug detectors. The mice are kept in containers, and if the mice detect any explosives or drugs, they will trigger an alarm by pressing a button. Each mouse can work in 4-hour shifts and have proven to be more accurate than x-ray machines and dogs at finding explosive and drugs.
What? That's amazing. You got another?
Yep, absolutely. So, guess what?
What?
Mouse urine glows under fluorescent light.
Really?
Yeah.
So, if you shine a UV light all over your cheese and you see splashy bits, that's because mice have been peeing on food they don't like.
How has that not been a test, actually?
I don't know, because...
well, because mice don't like cheese.
Yeah. So, any more?
Yes. Okay, so... although you'll generally hear that eating considerable amounts of cheese will lead to heart disease long term due to the high amount of saturated fat in the cheese, the two countries that lead the world in cheese consumption, France and Greece, consuming about 7 times the Centre for Science and Public Interest recommended amount of cheese per week, 7 times, and about 36% more cheese than Americans on average, also have some of the lowest rates of heart disease of any countries in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Honestly, I suppose
they eat the most cheese and they have the lowest rate of heart disease. Eat more cheese. But it should also be noted that according to a Curtin University of Technology study done in about 2009, people who consumed 5 servings per day of cheese rather than 3 had a significant reduction in abdominal fat, lower blood pressure and lower blood sugar.
Hang on, I'm just going to call my trainer right now and tell him that I've found the solution. And then I'm going to go see my cheesemonger and get skinny for summer.
Cheese for all!
Cheese for everybody!
So mice don't like cheese?
I like cheese. And to be honest, if it's more cheese for us and less cheese for mice, then I am down with that arrangement. Honestly, I really want cheese now.
I really want you to take on the challenge of eating a type of cheese every day for 4 years.
Okay.
And look, scientifically speaking, you will probably have lower abdominal fat, lower blood sugar and lower blood pressure.
This is an arrangement that I can definitely work to.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Show with Taz and Marcus. We're very, very sorry that it's a day late, and we hope we didn't disrupt your Monday. We've gotten a few messages from people saying that it helps them get up on a Monday morning. So we're sorry that it wasn't there for your listening ears. But next week we'll be back Monday morning in time for your shower.
Back on track, back on schedule. Living the dream, keeping you clean on a Monday morning.
Living the dream, keeping you clean.
The support we get for this podcast from you guys is absolutely unbelievable, and we cannot thank you enough. The main way that podcasts spread is through word of mouth. So if you enjoy what we do, if you like the way we debunk the mysteries of the world, just tell one or two people to check us out, and hopefully they'll do the same. It really, really helps.
If every person listening to this recommended the podcast to one other person, we would double our listenership, and then maybe we could do 2 episodes a week. Ooh. No, I'm sorry I said that. If you are like our lovely, lovely head stuff man, Paddy, and you have a question that you would like debunked in a bite-sized, informative chunk, then you can send us your questions. You can send them to us on social media.
All you need to do is look up In the Share with Taz and Marcus on Facebook or tweet us at In the Share Pod.
If you want to send your question in via email, send it to intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com. And on that note, if you've no questions and you just want to message us, say hello, tell us you're listening. We would love that. All you listeners are invisible to us. We'd love, love, love to hear that you're listening and enjoying what we're doing.
Absolutely. Send cheese.
A few thank yous to close off the episode.
Thank you to cheese. On a serious note, thank you very much to Paddy and Alan and all the crew in the Head Stuff podcast studio. You let us do what we do and share our information with the masses. So a big shout out to you.
Next shout out goes to Flo Robinson for our lovely cover art. We love you, Flo.
A final thank you to Dave Gertzman. Dave came up with our theme song that goes a little something like this. 1, 2, 3, 4. Bum to bum bum to bum to bum to bum to bum bum to bum. Yeah, Dave is a legend. You can follow him on Instagram at Dave's Recordorama. He's very, very cool.
And lastly, thank you to you for listening to this episode. We are so, so happy and honored that you are dedicating your ears to us for 15 or so. Minutes.
And you look sexy today.
Next week's question, Marcus.
Next week's question is a big one, and it comes all the way from, I was going to say like the Windy City, but I don't know what Toronto is. The Six. It's the Six. Yes, I remembered. Thank you, Drake. Oh, I feel like I'm part of the OVO crew now. Our next question comes all the way from Toronto from Lauren Jamie, who has messaged us saying, my hay fever is going crazy. Why do we have allergies? This is a good one. This is a big one.
And it's going to be out next Monday morning in time for your shower. But in the meantime,
achoo!
Keep
scrubbing!
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Ça va? Super. Pas pire pantoute. Numéro 1. Ça roule. Bien, merci. C'est cool. Comme sur des roulettes. Ben correct. Quand on se fait demander comment ça va, on dit souvent que tout va bien, même si c'est pas toujours le cas. Si ça ne va pas, parlez-en. Pour trouver de l'aide, appelez InfoSocial 811. Parce que parler, c'est commencer à aller mieux. Un message du gouvernement du Québec. Lights are out. No one goes there.
I'd rather
Well, that wraps it up for the Wednesday morning after. Keep listening to CKUT.
Mercredi 16 mars, vous écoutez l'émission Sleepy King Radio. Mon nom est Benoît Chaput.